This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Wednesday, September 4th, 2013. I'm Caleb Brown. The president's history of respecting Congress's explicit power to declare war isn't a strong one, and it's for that reason any limits the Senate might place on his power to conduct a war in Syria might not stick. Gene Healy, a vice president at the Cato Institute, breaks down the Senate's version of a permission slip to go to war. President Obama has sought what from Congress exactly? Approval, certainly not permission.
Well, he maintains that he has the inherent authority to go to war with or without Congress, and that's what Secretary Kerry has said as well. He has the right to launch these operations regardless of what Congress does. On the other hand, I think it's going to be very hard to ignore the results of a vote after having called for the vote. If the vote turns out to be no, it would be a very difficult thing politically, I think, for Obama to simply let the tomahawks fly like so many other presidents have done before.
The Senate voted on an amendment offered by Rand Paul, which essentially used the president's words against him in 2007. He said the president does not have the authority, I believe he told Charlie Savage, the president does not have the authority to take unilateral military action unless there's an imminent threat. And he used that to construe that the Congress, if it were to vote against the president, he would be found in violation of the Constitution. And it failed miserably, only got 13 votes.
Oh, it was a neat trick to throw the president's words back in his face. He did say that on the campaign trail, and he got it right. The president doesn't have any constitutional authority to launch sudden attacks, in the name of humanitarian principles. He does have a reserved constitutional authority to defend against attacks on the United States. But, in the 2011 Libya intervention, Barack Obama showed just how faithful he was going to be to that campaign promise when he not only launched an undeclared war on Libya, denied that it was a war. The phrase was kinetic military action, which is an odd phrase because I believe kinetic action is the only kind of action you can have. The alternative would be static action, I guess. But he not only launched tomahawks and airstrikes against Libya without congressional authorization, he violated the time limits in the War Powers Resolution, taking that war beyond 60 days. That was something, by the way, that his own Justice Department refused to back him up on.
The authorization of the use of military force that is floating around in the Senate right now, what does it contain?
Well, on Saturday, the president released a draft authorization for the use of military force in Syria, and that resolution was strikingly broad. It had no time limits. It gave him the power to use U.S. armed forces, no limitations as to whether those could be boots on the ground. And it did not limit him to attacking the Syrian regime or even to maintaining his actions in the geographic territory of Syria. It was broad enough for this president or perhaps even future presidents to launch a wider war. What the Senate did was the Senate Foreign Relations Committee has just released a revised authorization that tries to fix some of these problems. And the problem is that it's very difficult to get these limits to stick. And this is a situation where the president is seeking something that he should not have in the first place, and it's not Congress's job to fix something that he ought not to have.
The complaints in the Senate are some of them are about sunsets. That is to say, at what point would the president have to come back to Congress and either provide briefings or some sort of a limit on his use of military action? How credible are sunset provisions in any authorization of the use of force?
Well, with this particular president, I don't think they're very credible at all. The time limits that are in the Senate resolution track the time limits that are in the War Powers Act. He gets 60 days, and then he can re-up for another 30 if he tells the Congress he needs it. But as we know, in the Libya adventure, Barack Obama became the second president. Bill Clinton was the first with Kosovo to blow past the War Powers resolution's limits, and without Congress be damned. So, again, it's very difficult to see how that limit is going to stick.
A lot of these resolutions have whereases, sort of a list of particulars on why the action is being taken. What makes these whereases more relevant than they otherwise would be?
Yeah, you can usually ignore the Section 1 in an authorization for the use of military force. It often just lays out reasons the target regime has been a bad actor. In this case, though, there is a clause that recognizes in which if this resolution is passed, Congress would recognize an inherent power on the part of the president not just to defend the country or U.S. armed forces against attacks, but to use military force to defend, quote, the national interests of the United States. Now, that's broader than the limits, than the recognition of presidential authority in the War Powers Act. It's far broader than the constitutional limits that Obama recognized on the campaign trail in 2007. And I think you have to worry that if this is authorized, it gives away the game. I mean, if the president, if Congress is for the first time writing into law and recognizing that the president has a power to use military force in the name of what he perceives to be the national interests of the United States, a power to use offensive military force, then that is as broad a power as any president could assert.
In 2001, Congress passed an authorization of the use of military force shortly after the attacks on September 11, 2001, and the powers that are contained in that authorization have been broadened for years and years and years, and we're still learning, even very recently, how those powers are being applied.
Yeah, the history of AUMFs is that presidents will push them for all they're worth to the limits of the language and usually beyond. With the Gulf of Tonkin resolution in Vietnam, Johnson said, "We seek no wider war. This is going to be a limited action." Well, it gave us the longest war up to that point in American history until the AUMF that was passed after September 11th, which we are still using to wage what seems to be a perpetual war. And as you say, the language in that resolution has been strained past the breaking point. President Bush used it to authorize secret surveillance programs to make the claim that American citizens could be captured on American soil and held in military confinement. President Obama has used it to support the targeting of American citizens for death by drone strike abroad. And it has been used by President Obama to expand a network of secret drone bases in the Middle East and Africa. War against increasingly marginal groups that didn't even exist on September 11th. I mean, we literally have drones over Timbuktu, which sounds like a joke, but it's not. This resolution has been used to authorize what seems to be a permanent war.
Given what we know about how President Obama has largely disregarded the War Powers Act, the terms of the Constitution, and how President Bush and President Obama have made use of the 2001 AUMF, what is the likely outcome here?
I think what you can say from looking at history is this authority will be pressed as far as it can go and maybe further. Even if the risks of presidential abuse of what the Senate is contemplating right now, even if they aren't as great as the abuses we've seen with the 2001 AUMF, I think what's pretty clear is the idea that President Obama is going to do anything useful or even coherent with the new authority he seeks is those chances are pretty small. I mean, if you listen to the case for the action they want to take, the case for airstrikes against Syria, what are we doing here? The idea is that to punish people who, quote, flout international norms, we're going to launch a war that's clearly illegal under Article 51 of the UN Charter. The idea is that we're going to be vindicating this sacred principle that if a dictator is going to slaughter civilians, he better make sure he does it with conventional weapons. The case for war doesn't make any sense, and that's why I don't think it makes a lot of sense for Congress to take this risk. If Congress should not be in the business of fixing something that the president shouldn't have in the first place.
Gene Healy is a vice president at the Cato Institute. You can read more of his work at cato.org.